Okay, I want to welcome to the show the Nevada County District Attorney, Cliff Newell. Cliff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Chamba. Thanks for having me again.
It is my pleasure, and thank you very much for coming on the show. This show is in response to questions that have been submitted to me by local citizens, residents, who have valid permission recommendations from doctors to grow medical cannabis. And they have a series of questions, so let's jump right in, if that's okay.
That's perfect.
Okay. To properly prepare cannabis for use as a medicine, trimming off the slag from the harvested plants is necessary. For a variety of reasons, some growers cannot trim all their plants. Can growers legally employ others to trim for them?
There's no prohibition against people helping somebody else trim a plant, as you describe.
Okay. Can they be paid for their labor?
I suppose so. Like I know no law prohibiting somebody from doing that. And
okay.
I've never had an opportunity or a referral from a law enforcement agency where they arrest the trimmers and ask us to prosecute them.
Okay. Do the trimmers have to have medical marijuana recommendations, or are they simply farm workers and employees?
I guess if it's a... And here, presupposing everything we're talking about is the valid recommendation in a legal size grow, there's no problem with them helping somebody.
Okay, fine. And so if law enforcement shows up at a particular grow site and the grow site is legal, it's within the Nevada County guidelines and state guidelines, then anybody that they're trimming is an employee and they have no liability.
I wouldn't see where they would, Jamba.
Fine. Okay. And
The only thing I would suggest is that if you're actually employing people to help you, that you follow, you know, any of the tax laws that may be involved in paying somebody as contract labor or so on.
Oh, okay.
There may be an issue there, but it's not something that the local police would typically get involved with.
Okay. All right. I think that settles that. Another hypothetical situation, and I know you hate hypotheticals, but that's what we got to deal with. The landlord rents out separate dwellings to tenants. All the tenants have doctor's recommendations. Due to privacy rights, the landlord may not be aware of exactly how many plants a tenant might be growing, how much dry product they might possess, how much money they might have under their mattress, or if they possess firearms. Law enforcement visits and finds one or more gardens on that parcel are out of compliance, while the other gardens are within compliance. How's this treated? Are all plants and all gardens on the parcel confiscated and all residents treated as having broken the law?
Potentially. You put yourself greatly at risk if you choose to grow with somebody who you know is out of compliance or is out of compliance. And I have admonished your listeners and anybody that calls my office and takes the time to talk to me about it to be very, very careful about who you choose to grow with. You are putting yourself at risk if somebody else is outside the guidelines. All that in each individual case is going to be taken on its own, but a law enforcement officer in the field won't always be able to tell that this is grower A's and they're in compliance, this section over here is grower B, and another section is grower C. If they roll up and they just find two of those three people out of compliance, that shows a grow that is, you know, if it, for the legal person, if they're attributing some of those plants to them, it shows something that's out of compliance, and they typically would take it all if it looks like it's greatly out of compliance, and then you have to assert your affirmative defense under the Prop 215 and SB 420.
Okay. What I was referring to is a parcel that's large enough so they really are separate gardens. They're physically separated.
If they're physically separated, again, I admonish you to, it's all in the details here. You're working under an exception to the law by being able to grow medical marijuana and use it. So you want to make sure you have all the documentation that shows that you fall under that that exception readily handy for the law enforcement officers. If you can show them, this is my piece of property. I rent here. Here's my electric bill. Shows that I'm the renter here. Here's my recommendation. It shows that I have a legitimate need for a specific amount of marijuana. Here's my crop estimate. You know, I'll tell you, I think it's going to turn out this much. I'm within your county guidelines, or I fall under the state guidelines of It falls under a legitimate amount for my need, as I can document. You're not going to get too many law enforcement officers who's going to spend the effort to eradicate what is obviously illegal grow and then bring it to me for prosecution and have it rejected because we wouldn't be able to do anything with it in trial.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've had various people recommend that one takes a doctor's recommendation, laminates it, and actually posts it on the garden gate. What do you think of that?
It's absolutely recommended. That's just one more step for law enforcement to look at that you're trying to comply and make sure that nobody else is going to get a copy of that recommendation and use it a couple miles away in another garden, because we've had that happen on more than one occasion where people will display the same recommendation on several different plots, and we try to keep track of those. So when we find people that are misusing their recommendations in that fashion, that we can keep up with them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But always keep your original. You want to keep that safe, just like you would any other valuable document. And if you don't have it on your garden, have it readily handy for the officers to see.
I see. Let's discuss cooperative gardens. For one reason or another, somebody can't grow on their own land, and so they get together with friends and they have a cooperative garden. The cooperative garden, it would seem to me that they wouldn't want to turn loose of their original on that garden. They'd want to keep that in their own possession. So in that case, on the garden would not be the original. It would be a copy.
And I would recommend that as well.
Okay.
For the person's own protection. So they.
Okay. How many people gathering together as a cooperative would you consider reasonable? And at what point do you say, wait a minute, you guys are scamming us?
That's a in-the-field, case-by-case analysis by law enforcement, and then, you know, maybe by advice from my office, from my dope deputy or myself. The keeping in mind that the larger the grow gets, the more attention it's going to get, and the more likely you are to fall outside of the parameters of the state guidelines and potentially even become a target for a federal investigation. If you've got a lot of people growing a lot of marijuana, they don't care, the feds, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple things to consider there. If you're going to gather together with 30 people and have, you know, potentially six plants apiece, if you're growing, you know, the maximum amount under the guidelines,
that's 180 plants.
Yeah, people are going to start, wondering, you know, what's going on there.
Okay.
It stops looking like for medicinal use only, and starts looking like a commercial operation.
Okay.
As you get larger.
You're not comfortable in picking a number and saying, if this many people gather, that's reasonable, and if more than that gather, we're going to start to wonder.
I'm really not comfortable picking a number, Chamba, because it all varies on the facts. If you have 10 people together that only need one or two plants to supply their personal needs, then, you know, that's a, you know, reasonable amount of people to grow together. If you have 10 or more people that require the maximum amount of plants to grow what for their personal needs, then that is a little more sketchy. You know, there's a lot of plants involved there, and you also put yourself at risk of getting hooked up with somebody who's not fully complying. Now, remember, if you choose to grow with them, you have picked.
You married them.
Yeah, you've married them, and for all intents and purposes, you know, what goes wrong for them goes wrong for you, and could go very wrong in some instances, as we've seen recently.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We did have a call. The caller's hung up. If anybody wants to phone in with concise questions for our guest, you'd be welcome to do so. Please don't bring up lengthy stories about what happened to you and expect him to solve the problems. That isn't what today's show is about. But if you have specific and concise questions, you're welcome to phone in. The numbers are 265-9555 and 1-800-355-5867. Caller, you're live on KVMR.
Hi. My question is, if you have your medical prescription and you want it to grow, what rights does the landlord have to allow or disallow that, or what rights do you have to grow?
That, I think, is going to depend on your lease. You can do anything that's legal in the that's enumerated on the lease. And but you'll have to watch out because some landlords will have a lease that says you may not do anything that's violative of county ordinance, state law, or federal law. And in that case, you'd be in a contractual violation with your landlord on as far as your lease terms go and set yourself up for a potential eviction.
Question answered?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for calling. Caller, you're live on KVMR.
Hi, Chamba. I don't think they should have community gardens. What community gardens is going to do is just invite trouble.
Okay, thank you for your opinion, but I'd like to stick to today's topic, and that is we have a very valuable guest at hand with limited time, so I would like to stick to questions to the...
Okay.
All right, but thank you. Caller, you're live on KVMR.
Yeah, I had a question.
Go for it.
All right, what about supplying people to grow marijuana in terms of like either soil or supplying the lights? Is there anything illegal about that? You're actually targeting these people and you don't necessarily know whether they're in the legal realms or not.
Did you get that question?
I think so. As I understand the question, is it illegal to sell products that you grow marijuana with? No, it's not. There's several stores that seem to, you know, really cater to that group, and I have no knowledge of them being held to task or being investigated by law enforcement.
Question answered?
Question answered. Thank you.
It's your turn, caller. You're live on KVMR. Hello? You're live on KVMR? Guess you're not. Caller, you're live on KVMR.
Yeah. I'm wondering, you may have covered this, I just tuned in. I'm wondering what is the stance on possession of medical concentrates, whether it be edibles or tinctures or hash?
Great question.
Hash falls under, according to the Attorney General and Attorney General opinion, concentrated cannabis falls under Prop 215. Most district attorneys don't particularly care for that description, nor do law enforcement, because as all of us know, it's considerably stronger and obviously concentrated just by definition of what the product is. But it does fall under 215, hash has done, but then we would do probably a different quantitative analysis. If I see somebody with 2 pounds of marijuana for the medicinal needs for the year, I think that's legitimate. Potentially, depending on what, you know, their doctor's recommendation indicates. However, if I find somebody with 2 pounds of hashish, then I'm having a bit different opinion as to whether that's really for a medicinal need or not. It'll all depend on what the facts are, but as you well know, 2 pounds of hash is, you know, a lot more in value and in...
Medicinal value as well.
Medicinal value is, yep, 2 pounds of marijuana.
Question answered?
I see. Well, I'm kind of wondering also, is there a ratio that you would look at as you said, 2 pounds of cannabis to maybe half that or a certain ratio that would be more acceptable with hash?
No, that's one of the problems, is that there's not a lot of quantitative and qualitative analysis and studies done on the various strains and potencies of marijuana. There's a lot of it done informally and by various growers and people who, you know, develop clones and strains. But for what I can use for law enforcement purposes, there isn't. So no, I cannot give you a ratio as to what would be allowable there.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for your question. I've got one for you. For whatever reason, visiting agents cut down plants and confiscate drying or dried cannabis. I should say here that this question is probably more properly addressed to Sheriff Keith Royal, but unfortunately he could not be on the show. So I'm going to throw it at you. For whatever reason, visiting agents cut down plants and confiscate dried or drying cannabis. At a later date, the grower is exonerated and the judge orders the confiscated cannabis be returned. The experience of many who have been in this position is that the confiscated cannabis has either been stored wet in plastic bags or is returned and is returned as a moldy, soggy mess, or conversely, it sat on a shelf in a hot storage room and is so dry out as to be medically worthless. Since legally the cannabis is medicine, and that often represents their year's supply of their medicine, is this fair treatment for the patient, and is there a remedy for this situation?
back to being careful who you grow with and the situations you get caught up with. And you have to be talking, I presume, about federal agents. When the feds come in, they don't have the same requirements, nor do they have the same state law to follow. And
no,
many people get scooped up in the...
No, what I was referring to...
collateral damage.
If the feds scoop it up, it's gone. There's
right.
no way you're going to get it back. But if a county or state confiscates it, you go to court, the judge may say give them their medicine mm-hmm. back. But the medicine at this point is worthless. Is there any remedy for this situation?
Well, as you talk to the sheriff. And I hate to pass the buck onto that, but I really can't speak to their evidence retention.
Okay. Well, if I can get him on the show, I'll ask him. All right. Let's see. I think we have a caller. Caller, you there? Caller, you're live on the air. I guess not. Supposed to hang on just a second here. Okay. In your ideal scenario, what do you see as, what would you like to see as far as people growing cooperatively? That seems to be the stickiest situation. If somebody's growing individually, that's open and shut. What would you like to see if people want to get together and grow cooperatively?
If people are going to grow cooperatively, it's preferably done in small groups, intimate groups where you know each other, so you avoid some of those dangers I spoke about earlier of somebody else trying to work outside the system and you getting caught up with them. I would like to see the growers and the users of Nevada County taking advantage of the marijuana identification card program that our health and safety department has opened up and makes available. Those cards will eliminate a lot of question because the research that law enforcement has to do when they get to a garden to find out if it falls within the exception of the law and is legitimate, is done for them ahead of time. And by possessing that card and following the guidelines, it eliminates any questions. They can just see the card, see the grow, and they're out of there. They know you're legitimate.
That would presuppose that if it's a cooperative garden, everybody in that cooperative has one of those cards.
It would, but if you run a... You know, and I can't speak for the law enforcement officers. You know, we've tried to make the memorandum of understanding between our agencies enough so they have room to work within them. But if they find a garden that has, you know, say six people or five people participating together and they get four cards and they have one that just has his recommendation, you know, I as an officer, I'm not going to do as... You know, I'm not going to look too much further than that if everybody appears to be in compliance. And mm-hmm. they all appear to be separate entities, and they appear to be growing collaboratively because here's a good piece of property to grow on.
Okay. The great fear of somebody signing up for one of these cards is not on the county or state level. The great fear is that in the past, the feds have gone to doctors and they've confiscated doctors' records. So their fear would be that the feds would come in, confiscate your records, and all of a sudden, all of us have signed statements that we're breaking federal law.
Right, and we've talked about this a bit. The practical aspect of it is if you're a medicinal user, you don't have a tremendous amount of marijuana on hand, and you're not going to get prosecuted by anybody, nobody at the state level, much less the federal level. The feds do not have the resources or the time to focus on small individual people with medicinal needs.
Okay.
You know, as a practical matter, they aren't going to go and look at these records, nor do I think that they really have the authority to do that.
Is that something you could research? Because that's the key thing. Do they have the authority to do that? Now, where some of us would go with this, and maybe this is getting a little woo-woo, is the feds, for various reasons, have decided to persecute certain individuals for their political views, for their views as far as income tax, and they've gone at them with every weapon they've got, including the IRS, and everybody else. So theoretically, it's possible that they would come after someone not for the reason that they're growing marijuana, but this is a good excuse to nail them. And here we've got their signed statement that they're growing something that's illegal by federal statute.
Yeah, we should really bring Jeff Brown into this conversation and ask him what safeguards that our county Department of Health has put in place to keep those records. They are medical records. They do have some confidentiality under HIPAA.
Okay. Sounds like that's more work, more research for me then. Talk with Jeff Brown. Okay, I thought I was going to get off the hook and make you do all the work. This is not fair.
You're getting the theme here of passing the buck off first to the sheriff, then to you.
Yes, that's exactly how it's feeling, so I'm going to pass it off to our listeners. Listener, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Yeah, what are you supposed to do with your surplus from your garden? I know in Sonoma that they are allowed to sell it back to the dispensaries. What do we do in Nevada County?
Well, I am a firm believer in composting. It's goats. You may not distribute it. That's plain and simple. I think the law is clear on that. So what you would do with too many tomatoes.
Okay.
So let me see if I understand this. Caller, if you're still on the air, you're saying in some other counties they can legally they can sell them back to the dispensary?
As I understand it, they're supposed to.
And Cliff is shaking his head very vigorously.
Yeah, I don't see that falling under the law. There's to be no sales exchange. I think the Attorney General's guidelines in supplying collaboratives and collectives is very clear on that. Maybe it's something that their county legislative body has determined is okay, because we can make laws that are more expansive than what the state law is at the county level. Under Prop 215, but I would really check into that if I were you.
Yeah, I will.
Definitely don't do it in this county, please.
I won't. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
I have a little bit of a hypothetical question. Let's say somebody is probably within the guidelines, and they interface with law enforcement. Law enforcement takes information such that they can make a determination whether they are in the guidelines. At some point, it seems to me like the law enforcement needs to purge that information if the person was determined to be within the guidelines, else law enforcement might be violating the HIPAA privacy laws for health information. Could you address that?
Certainly. My understanding is that if in the field they come up on a garden and there's recommendations there, they will make every attempt to contact the doctor directly and find out about that patient and if that's legitimate and consistent with their needs. And then if they do, and it is, then they move on. That's not something that they cut a secret report and save it someplace.
Yes, but it seems to me if the privacy laws of the HIPAA legislation are to be followed, that information would need to be purged from your whatever kind of database you have, such that that health information cannot be tagged to that person's name, because I believe that's what the HIPAA privacy requirements are. And do you think you're in compliance with that?
I don't have a database. If you're talking about at the county level, I'm sure that they've set up guidelines that follow HIPAA, certainly.
Right, but wouldn't you possibly have records of law enforcement contacting this person?
No, I do not.
Okay.
There's no reason. We have way too much paper to keep track of as it is to keep track of paper where somebody's in compliance with the law. You know, once we determine that, they're of no interest.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Let me piggyback on that. Your office has no records. Would that be a fair question to ask Sheriff Keith Royal, that possibly they would keep records that this caller is concerned about?
Yeah, it would certainly be a question you could ask him, but I highly doubt it. Like I said, they are inundated with the jobs that they do now and the workload they have to keep, you know, files on innocent people or people who are in compliance with law isn't a normal thing done in law enforcement.
Well, yeah, but what this gentleman seems to be saying is they've already got paperwork. The question is, do they destroy it or do they keep it?
No, he's saying that when they come on the garden and then they check on the legitimacy, my understanding is when they're checking the legitimacy of the recommendation to make sure it's not, you know, used multiple places and stuff, they check it and then it's gone once they're done. It's
one
not
would hope.
Well, I do know that they don't do that because I have access to, you know, numerical reports, and everything is done numerically, and there's no, as far as I know, there's no conspiracy out there and secret stash of reports that we're building on the various citizens of Nevada County.
Okay, and I don't think that the paranoia is at that level yet.
Yeah,
might
I would
be.
Hope not.
Okay, but again, pragmatically, they go out and they look at a grow and they make some sort of notes because they have to justify their time. They can't be accused of drinking coffee and eating donuts all day long. So they have to justify their time. Okay, so they went out to such and such a property and they did an inspection and this is what they came up with. One assumes they're going to write down the names of the certificates that they saw, because even if those certificates are legal, when they go out 2 weeks later, they want to make sure that the same names don't crop up. So they've already got records. And I think this gentleman is saying, what happens to those records?
That's exactly correct,
okay.
Because I believe the HIPAA health privacy laws would prevent names associated with the medical information. And if it's determined that this is medical use as opposed to some kind of commercial thing, I think that would then fall under HIPAA, and you'd be required to make sure names and other information are not associated to comply with that privacy provision.
In other words, purged from the system.
Correct. Or, you know, even if there's records, as long as names or no partial identifiers or something that could lead back, because the HIPAA privacy restrictions are very concise on that health information cannot be divulged. And this, you know, if a person's in compliance, this is clearly, I think, would be, you know, very clear that would fall under the HIPAA privacy requirement. So anyway, it might be worth a little bit more investigation to see exactly what information you're keeping and how you're keeping it and whether names or addresses could be associated with that information. I understand it's kind of a pain in the rear for you guys because that might be quite a mess because your normal thing, let's say you go to a house and it's a possible burglary. Well, you keep records of all that stuff. So then this makes kind of an exception to what your normal record keeping would be. So just a hypothetical question, but I won't take up any more time because I'm sure more people need to.
I appreciate your asking the question, and since I love to pass the buck, would you be willing to contact Sheriff Keith Royal and ask him those questions? Because that's where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, okay.
And then please get back to me.
Okay, great.
Terrific.
Thanks for the show.
Thank you. And thanks for your understanding of the situation.
Let me respond just a little bit further than that, because I do read a lot of police reports, almost every one that's written in the county. And typically the information I see in reports when it's we did recently have an attempted burglary and pot theft that was referred to my office, and they did confirm that the people had legitimate recommendations, but that's all they said. You know, we knew who the victims were. They said that there were three recommendations or two recommendations, I forget how much, and the amount of marijuana that was growing, and they said recommendations were legitimate, and that was the only information that was in the report. There was no real identifying. We don't go so far as to say they have glaucoma, they have cancer, or, you know, what the medical part is.
Were the people's names listed?
Well, of course, they were victims of an attempted theft, so they would have to be.
Okay. So at that point, it sounds like our caller's concerns have some validity.
Yeah, I suppose so, in a large stretch of the imagination.
In a roundabout way, yeah. Okay. All right. This brings up something that another listener asked me about previously, and that's firearms. What are the laws for defending your property, including a legitimate medical marijuana crop?
You may defend your life. You may not. I mean, if we're just going to go cut to the chase with deadly force, you may not defend your property with deadly force.
Can you brandish a weapon?
It depends. You may use the amount of force necessary, short of deadly force, to protect yourself and, up to a point, your property. But you may not use deadly force. So if people are out there taking your garden, go inside and call the police and ask them to stop. And from there on, try to make yourself a good witness for us to, you know, ultimately have a prosecution for the police to investigate it. You know,
get license plates.
Get license plates, get descriptions of the people, write the stuff down, because live memory is often flawed, especially when you start trying to recall it in the excitement of an event.
Okay. Shooting out their tires?
I would not recommend discharging a firearm at somebody to save anything. I mean, to save marijuana, to save your bicycle, to save, you know, a handful of money. You run the risk of hurting somebody and shooting somebody, and then you're not only at risk criminally, potentially, but you're at risk civilly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We discover that somebody is in our garden, looks like they're stealing. We phone 911?
Absolutely.
Okay, that sounds fine if you live in a city, but for remote people, the response time can be very lengthy.
The sheriff's done a good job of expanding his officers, being spread around the community. He's done a good job. He's got people up in North San Juan. He's got people at the south and west end of the county. They try to keep somebody, so the response time is down. And that's, I know, a big concern to him is decreasing that response time to our outlying communities.
So okay.
It is what it is. We live in the rural area, and that's one of the reasons we like to live out here. But just along with that rural lifestyle comes some inconveniences.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay.
You know, law enforcement response is one of those, as well as fire or anything else.
Okay. So if we're to give advice to people with gardens, if you find thieves, you phone 911. And you get as much information as you can, acting in safety. Try and get license plates, descriptions of the car, descriptions of the people, so that you have written down evidence.
In any case, your personal safety is paramount. That's what it's all about. I don't want anybody to get hurt out there. Nothing's worth protecting with your safety, nor is it worth protecting at your risk of being criminally liable or civilly liable.
Okay. Caller, you're live on KVMR.
Hi, I just want to thank the district attorney for coming in and speaking. And my question is, if you have surveillance cameras, do you also need to post that there are surveillance cameras on the property? And can you also speak to if whatever laws there are covering that refer to audio surveillance as well? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks.
You stumped me with that one. I'm not sure. I do note that most places I see cameras, I see warnings of surveillance, but if somebody's in the actually committing a crime, we're going to use that surveillance video.
Whether they've been properly notified that they're on camera or not.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting legal point, though. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Yeah, hi. I would like the district attorney, if you will, to clarify what is the rule for these dispensaries, because I've heard rumors of people saying, well, I just sell this to dispensaries, and I don't quite understand the legality of that. And would you please clarify that?
It's illegal. Pure and simple.
Okay. How do they get there? How do these dispensaries get their product then?
Well, the key word there is sell, and there is no place in the statutory law that allows the youth and distribution of marijuana among a collective that mentions sales. And there's actually quite a bit written about it not being for sales from the first initiative in Prop 215 throughout SB 420.
So in your mind, there's a serious question whether any dispensary is legal.
That's exactly right.
That's the way I read the rules, too, so that, you know, there's sure a lot of them.
There are. as far as I know, there are no
not up here,
dispensaries in Nevada County.
Right. No, I understand that. But, that clarifies a lot for me. Thank you so much.
Certainly.
Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Hey, Chama. Good show.
Thank you.
I'm kind of throwing it back to property protection again. Everybody always talks about protecting with weapons. I'm a martial arts instructor in the Yuba City area. I'd like to know...
Are you a deadly weapon?
Am I a deadly weapon? I don't consider myself that, but a lot of people do. I've heard that some people consider martial arts like carrying a concealed weapon.
Let's ask the man.
All right, thank you very much. I'll take the answer off the air.
Thanks for your question.
Yes.
Sir, you can use the amount of force necessary to effect a citizen's arrest, amount of force necessary to detain somebody, short of physical, you know, violence. You cannot break their legs to make sure they stay there for the police. There's some point where you're going to have to back off. I mean, if you're a martial artist and they're not adept at that and you're sure that, you know, you're not going to go out there and get yourself hurt or don't have a path of escape that's readily necessary, you can put somebody, say, in a control hold and hold them if they're violating the law as law enforcement are responding. You can ask somebody to stay, and I've seen people actually stay when they, for shoplifters, for instance, when they get caught by security, they don't have to stay, but they say, stay here in this room, and people will stay.
Not quite so likely for a marijuana thief.
No, not quite so likely, and the other thing I would caution you is the marijuana thieves are prone to violence, I've seen, and I don't know how many cases are not reported, but that's one of my big concerns with the larger grows, is that you open yourself up to that type of scrutiny, if not from law enforcement, from the anti, the other side, you know?
Okay, that opens up an area for me. A number of concerned citizens who have legal recommendations for growing cannabis, medical cannabis, are observing the phenomena of these large grows are attracting the feds. The feds come in. When they come in, they are like Sherman marching to Atlanta. Any marijuana plant they see on anybody's property, they chop. As a consequence, there have been a number of small growers that are operating legally under state and county regulations that have lost their crops. And a growing number of citizens and growers are becoming very upset with these large growing operations. What can we do about that?
You can do about that what I would ask a citizen to do about any other crime that occurs in our community. From, say, graffiti and vandalism, I would expect the citizens to be involved and make themselves witnesses and reporters. The sheriff... back to the rural county, we live out here, and it's few and people are sometimes few and far between. We need the help of the citizenry to protect, you know, those legal people and those people that are using the law for what it was designed and meant for. Those that are taking advantage of it and putting the rest of you at risk need to be turned into law enforcement. The other aspect, as I indicated before, is people using their cards. So we... the legal people are easily identified, and the illegal are held out, held to answer for, you know, what they're doing.
Okay. So I guess there's something I want to say at this point. There's a growing number of people in this community that are getting pretty upset with these large growers, precisely because you're putting the rest of us at jeopardy. And I would like... all growers who are growing large illegal grows that are going to subject to bringing the feds in, you're messing things up for everyone. I'd like you to consider that and seriously consider taking your operation somewhere else. Do not pretend to be our friends and neighbors when you're jeopardizing our medical marijuana grows. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Yes, hi. This past summer, I was arrested with my medical marijuana on off a military base. I wasn't inside the gate, but they said it was on the property. So could you address the issue of the legality of being on a federal property, like even here in the state of California? For example, if you're approaching a military base or a national forest even. And I'll take my answer off the air if I could.
Quite simply, stay off of federal property. You are at risk no matter what size grow or what reason you have for growing.
Yeah, the feds are pretty clear. It's illegal. So if you're caught on federal property, it's over. Okay, phones are silent for a minute. Have we not covered anything that you'd like to cover?
I think that covers it. It's a huge issue in our community, and it's going to continue to present itself until we come to some sort of determination in the law, whether it's legalized or some more clarification, so we all know where we are.
Okay, then I've got a philosophic question for you. Somebody's suffering from some sort of, let's call it depression. They go to a doctor and they get a medical prescription for Prozac or Oxycontin. Then somebody else goes to a doctor and they get a medical recommendation for cannabis. Why are they treated differently? Law enforcement does not go after abusers of Oxycontin or abusers of Prozac.
We do go after abusers of Oxycontin. I mean, they're frequently prosecuted for driving under the influence. They're prosecuted for being under the influence in certain situations, for using it illicitly. We don't do them, and I'm trying not to do them differently. If a person falls under the exception, that's why we have the guidelines. That's why the sheriff and the police departments joined with my office in finding kind of an area where you can feel safe in what you grow or produce for your own personal use for medicinal needs. I don't think we treat them differently. It's just okay. That it's a little more obvious. And the other difference is that the Oxycontin still has to fall under an exception. You have to have a medical recommendation or prescription in that case.
Right.
And with cannabis, you have a medical recommendation.
Okay. It right. just seems to be that there's a such an emphasis on the misuse of cannabis. It seems to be a much greater emphasis.
Not from my office, not from my perspective. The misuse in the sales and the growing aspect of it is a big concern in our community for all the problems that we've talked about today. The misuse of Oxycontin and other opiates or illicit drugs is also of a equal concern or more concern, because then we start dealing with individuals and families and communities and the things that we abhor, you know, the negative effects of any kind of drug or substance that's overused or abused.
Okay. Typically, towards the end of a show, the phones just light up. The hook, and that's where we're at. Okay, caller, it's your turn. Please be brief. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hello?
You're live on the air. Please be brief.
I just wanted to know what the rules are as far as the use of it outside of your home.
Terrific. Great question.
You can, if you have the appropriate recommendation, you can use marijuana wherever it is legal to smoke. If you're, with the exception of the statutory requirements in SB 420 and 215, where you're not allowed to do it by a school, those obvious places, parks where it's prohibited, city streets where smoking may be prohibited.
So let me be absolutely clear on this. I noticed that outside of every bar, there's people smoking cigarettes. I could go there and legally smoke my cannabis outside of a bar?
Unless there's some prohibition, unless it's a public place where, you know, you have to be 20 feet or 25 feet back from the door.
Okay.
How about you do attract the attention of law enforcement, though, when you do, so.
That's why I don't do it. Yeah. How about in a parked car? Car is not driving. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting in a parked car.
You would raise no more attention than if you were sitting in a parked car drinking Jim Beam. You know, they're both, you shouldn't drive when you're under the influence of marijuana, nor should you drive under the influence of alcohol or any other drug that admonishes not to drive under it.
Okay, but as long as I'm not driving, as long as I'm parked, I have not broken a law.
You haven't broken a law there.
Great. Caller, you're live on KVMR. Please be brief.
Yes, where California is a legal state and Hawaii is a legal state, if you're flying between the two, do you fall under federal once you step into an airport?
You do fall under federal law in airports and airplanes.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Do not leap out, however. It's not worth it.
No.
Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR. No, you're not there. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Yes, I'd like to ask the DA, isn't it state law that cannabis is equal to hashish? If you had 1 pound of hashish, it would be equal to 1 pound of marijuana in a legal sense?
It is not by state law. It is by attorney general opinion, says that is included within the Compassionate Use Act.
So there's no statement about that hash is not equal to, say, bud marijuana.
I'm not quite sure what the there's nothing that defines it specifically. It calls it concentrated cannabis in the penal or the health and safety code.
Okay, on the internet, I typed it in, and it seemed that it came up. A lawyer came on and said that hashish is equal to marijuana according to state laws, and I just wanted to clarify that issue with you.
Well, we can certainly debate that, as I would. As I indicated, if somebody is with 2 pounds of marijuana as opposed to 2 pounds of hashish, you're going to have to prove the exception in court that you fall with under the compassionate use guidelines and so on.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate your information.
Certainly.
Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, I want to just state that I really appreciate your being on the show. I appreciate your being available and open and candid. This is an important issue for citizens. I'm glad you see it that way as well. And I appreciate the efforts that you and your staff have put into creating the guidelines and creating a workable situation out of a pretty unworkable proposition.
Thanks, John. I'm taking from that our show is over. It always goes too fast.
No, we got a few more minutes,
good.
So you're not off the hook yet.
Well, I appreciate it, and I do like being here. So if we run through the rest of the show without an opportunity to say it, whenever I can address the community, I'll be here to do so.
Thank you. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on the air. Please be brief.
Yeah, Chamba, regarding use of marijuana in a vehicle, the statute itself says that you can't use it in a vehicle that's being operated.
Correct.
Now, I don't know if they've defined operation of a vehicle, but it seems to me if you've got the car engine on, you may be operating a vehicle, so should be aware of that.
Great, yeah. Thanks for that.
You bet. Bob?
Do be aware of that and be careful, because there's been more than one DUI prosecuted and convicted for having only rolled forward for a few inches. That is operation and movement. So just
you're supposed to have your
put your parking back, put parking brake on firmly.
You know, would you normally, if you're administering medicine to yourself?
I can hear the show here. So I don't know.
Yeah, we're waiting, so just be patient.
We're heading out. Yeah, I would, if you know, as a rule of thumb, treat it like any other medicine. If you administered medicine to yourself, if you're diabetic, you wouldn't typically do that in a car. While driving, especially. And if you're downtown and you know, you have to administer marijuana to yourself, just know that if you're in a car and there's a lot of smoke, you would probably draw the attention of an officer, and he'd want to know, you know, what you were doing. And you could certainly show that you were doing something legitimate if you had your recommendation with you, and so on. So,
okay, caller, it's your turn.
Yes, I was just had a question about the development stages of growth of a plant, and at what point a plant is determined to be a marijuana plant. Would it be when it has leaves or buds, or is this too technical a question? I don't know, but would you have any response to that?
There's a couple stages, obviously, you know, before they're, well, typically people are using clones now, so we know they're female. It's typically when they're budding, and there's certain color aspects of different strains that the officers look for, whether they determine that they're mature and ready. And then there's various stages of maturity. If you're looking at it at the harvest stage and trying to determine what amount of marijuana is going to come off a plant, you're looking at one stage of maturity. As if you're looking for identification of the plant, there's another stage of maturity that you're looking for, and that's when you tell the gender.
Okay, when you can tell the gender, then it would be considered a marijuana plant.
You know, I think we're getting too technical here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you kindly.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, we got time for one more call. Caller, you're the last call. Please be brief.
Hello. You mentioned large grows earlier in the threat. I would like the DA to define a large grow. I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, there again, I told what I'm trying to say is that there, each and all depends on the circumstance. If you have 10 people that have banded together to grow collaboratively, and you're going to each have six, you're going to have 60 plants. That's a large grow, from my perspective. Anything more than, you know, one or two people growing, it starts getting up there in the size. There is no real definition of a large grow.
Isn't there a rule of thumb that the feds are not interested in under 100 plants, but over 100 plants, they're absolutely interested?
That's a rule of thumb, and I have seen people with 99 plants in the ground get taken to task by the federal authorities. So that's
okay.
It's not a good rule to follow, and it's certainly, even at a local level, 99 plants is going to raise suspicion in some fashion.
Okay, but I think we can guarantee that if you're growing over 100 plants, you have what's considered a large grow.
If by federal standards, yes, and by local standards as well, yeah.
So I hope that answers your question as well as can be answered. Okay, we are now officially out of time. Cliff Newell, District Attorney of Nevada County, thank you very much for being our guest on Rabble Rousing.
Thanks so much, Chamba.
All right.